Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You are now joined by myself, Fern.
And myself, Big Z.
And this is...
This is Spoke.
We now finish each other's sentences off. How beautiful is that?
It's just wonderful.
This episode is all about LGBT experiences. Did you know it has been 50 years since the Stonewall riot?
No, I didn't.
Did you not know that?
I didn't know, but now I do.
But that was a pivotal movement in the LGBT community.
Also, in today's society, although there has been a lot of dramatic improvement in the treatment of LGBT people, there's still a long way to go. There's been a lot of strides forward.
And you know what we'll also be talking about is the experiences of LGBT people of colour. Right, we've got Aisha Mirza and Ben Hunt in the studio today.
Very gassed, I can't lie. We're going to be having a wonderful conversation about LGBT, yeah, and their experiences. And 50 years after Stonewall.
And how is everyone?
Yeah, all right.
Yeah?
Yeah, feeling good, yeah.
Yeah. How was your breakfast?
Yeah, well, I do not have belly breath because I actually had a decent breakfast. So, yeah, I'm feeling good.
Obviously, Ben, I want to talk to you about recently you interviewed Billy Porter.
Yes.
Talk to me about that experience.
Billy Porter was a wonderful interviewee. As a black gay man myself, it was incredible to interview somebody who meant so much to me.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you understand, like, it's when you interview some people, it can be a bit whack. You're kind of like, okay, I'm just going to go along to this. I'm going to kind of do it. We may be feeling it today. But we're trying to kind of like... with LGBT affairs within the BBC, I'm trying to bring it to the people a lot more. And Billy Porter as an interview just meant so much to so many people within the community because he speaks truth and he speaks so openly and honestly about his struggles. It's taken him so many years to get recognition for what he's doing. And now as a 50-something-year-old black gay man, he's finally getting the dues that he deserved. So it was a really humbling interview to kind of speak to somebody like that.
So break that down for us a little bit in terms of, what you got from it. Because speaking to somebody who is, I don't know, 30 years older than you must have been incredible.
Yeah, he's been through a lot. He's seen a lot within being gay in America and being gay in the UK are very different experiences. So even though we can kind of combine on the black gay experience and feeling a bit othered by the LGBT community, speaking to Billy Porter, it brought home how much history there is around LGBT issues and affairs that for many of us who are younger, we just don't know about. He was talking about losing friends in HIV and AIDS crisis. He talked about the struggles of getting representation within the industry, even doing various different roles dressed as women and then being neglected by the black community because they saw him as too feminine to be an actor. There was so much that he's been through, and then it's great that he's obviously getting the clicks now and the recognition and like walking red carpets and slaying it, but he's had such a journey to get to where he is, and that was really humbling to hear.
Does it make you feel more like confident in yourself to have a role model like that, or do you think it changes? And the same for yourself, Aisha. Do you think role models in this topic really enable people to feel confident?
Go for Aisha, what do you think?
I don't think it does any harm at all. I think it's a beautiful thing that we're at this place now where we're seeing like so many people who are interested and active and like able to be outspoken about the things that matter to them and who they are and their identities. And like, it's great. I mean, certainly the feedback that I get from younger people kind of seeing what me and some of my peers are doing like in nightlife or whatever, make it sound as though it's a very helpful and like soothing thing to know that there's people out there doing stuff.
You're talking about nightlife. Could you elaborate on that for the people then?
Yeah.
Let them know what kind of things that you do.
Okay, so I recently started a club night, and it's also like a mental health hub for the QTPOC community. Do we know QTPOC? Is that an abbreviation we're using?
I had that before. Yeah.
No. It's like queer trans POC, basically. Or you can put a B in there, so it's like black people and people of colour.
Okay.
And intersex as well. But it's just like kind of an umbrella term for like a community of people who I think recognise, as we were talking about earlier, that they're like queer or gay or like trans or whatever it is that's happening for them. They're also a person of colour or a black person. And that's like a whole experience. And that's only like maybe two of like the identity markers that we're talking about. There might also be like a mental health thing going on, or like some kind of disability thing going on, like whatever it is. Mm. So it's just about carving out a space for those kinds of people. So I started, there's quite a few nights that like cater specifically to like that group. So there's like Pussy Palace and Babes and like there's a lot going on, and it's amazing. And so I think what I wanted to do was start one that was like more mental health focused specifically, because I think we're in this place now where it's like, it is 50 years, you know, since Stonewall, and like things have moved on in all of these ways, and there's acceptance and tolerance in new ways and all of that. But I think also this space that we've had to like carve out an identity for ourselves and like gather resources for ourselves has also meant that we've realized like what we need even more. And like, I think mental health support is one of them. So I started this club night called Misery, and it's a sober club night, and it's like centers like mental health and healing and stuff. So it's still very early, so we're playing around with it, but it's going down very well. And I think people really needed like a bit of an alternative, somewhere where they don't have to like necessarily like be hot or like, you know, like be wasted, or, you know, because like we replicate a lot of the same kind of like tricky narratives and like oppressions within our communities as well. So like it was just about noticing where we're doing that and like providing something a bit different.
And is that a night for anyone?
It's like it's a night that centers like queer people, trans people and people of color. And I think also anyone who feels like they need a sober space, because there are like so few that like if anyone is needing that, then like I would never turn them away. But it's also amazing because there's been so much work done specifically around race and like class and gender and sexuality and how they all interact now. And like we're in such a different place now in terms of people's understanding of that. I can quite comfortably say, like on a flyer, like white people, if you want to come, you can, and please like pay more on the door. And also,
that's mad.
Watch how much space you take up. And I feel like I can say that, and like the majority of people will get it, and they'll like act accordingly. Mm-hmm. And that's because of like all the work we've been doing up to this point. You know, it's been like a long battle to get there. But you know, people are like, "Can I bring my white girlfriend?" I'm like, "Yeah." Do they know how to act? You know? And people know what that means. And they'll have that conversation with their white partner before they come out, if they have to. Or they'll tell them to go do it themselves. So they don't have to like do that education work or whatever, you know? But like, we're just in an amazing place right now because of the work that everyone's been doing. It's really exciting.
Speaking of white partners, Ben, you have a white partner.
Yes.
Yeah. So talk to us about how that relationship...
You're welcome.
Right. So talk to us about how that relationship came about, and obviously being a black man, the first kind of time that you told your parents.
Yeah, so let's think back. Before I was actually the BBC's first LGBT correspondent, and not only that, their That's youngest amazing, correspondent.
Yeah, that is amazing.
One of only like, two black correspondents. Et cetera. Before all of that, I was an LGBT YouTuber. So I had a YouTube channel which was specifically based around being in an interracial relationship. Because it's something that you don't talk about in the gay community too much. You usually, as a black person or a person of colour, you're kind of sidelined. And you don't really get to mix and mingle in the same way as you would if you were white. You're not platformed in the same way. If I scroll through most of my friends' Instagram pages and see their explore pages, which shows you other pages based on what you like... one of the other days when we were at Pride, it took about 5 minutes to find a single black person on their explore page, because the Instagram algorithm just doesn't favour black or people of colour who are queer. So we started this YouTube account to basically talk about our relationship and talk about what it's like to be in an interracial relationship and be queer. And it popped off. It literally popped off. And in the same way as if you look at like socials at the moment, I had to start new accounts to take on this role because previously I was working for BBC Africa, which didn't allow me to be LGBT facing. So I kind of went from having a huge voice about LGBT issues, having no voice about LGBT issues, to now once again having a big voice about LGBT issues. So we've got like different accounts for all of this. But you'll see that there's a huge amount of like support and appreciation for people just being open about their relationship. I don't feel now that the race thing really comes into it as much as it previously did. I think we're in a very good time where people are very aware of their race, as you were saying, where I think white people are very aware of the privilege that they hold and the power that they hold, and some people are trying to do things about that. So I don't make a big thing of the fact that it's an interracial relationship anymore. I think that time has passed, but it is just, it's a big mood to have a partner and platform them and talk about your experiences of being in a relationship. It's something that straight people do all the time. On my way here, seeing straight people kissing in the street, it's something that gay couples usually would not do. There's a lot of straight privilege out there. And I guess in my role as LGBT correspondent, I'm just trying to give the people something different and just show that you can actually be in a positive, supportive, loving environment in a relationship where your parents will accept you, your friends will accept you, and your partner will accept you.
So what was it like for you coming out?
My coming out was an absolute mess. I was outed in school and then I was forced to leave the school.
Where did you go to school?
There's going to be a very good documentary on that coming out
very soon. Okay.
BBC. Okay. But I went to school in East London and it was an all-boys school and it was a grammar school. And yeah, it was just a bit of a mess, to be honest. But I was not feminine. I was not very flamboyant. I just fell in love with one of my best friends. We both had girlfriends at the time. And this person got really scared and decided to out me to everybody.
Yeah.
And as a result of that, then left the school, went to a community college. And basically, that's where my life started. Because as a result of that, I found my true friends. I found an environment where I could be myself. The college was very much like Skins. It was just, it was wild. Like, people didn't turn up to classes. People just kind of like lived their best lives, went partying, like literally having sex in fields and stuff. And I was like, what is this world? So yeah, it kind of like, it allowed me to actually experience what other people were going through. So yeah, no ill will.
Sorry to cut you. What was the support system from the school like at the time then?
Well, it was bad because they kicked me out.
Yeah.
So it was awful.
But why would they kick you out at such a sensitive time in your life? I'm finding hard to grasp. Like,
it happens to a lot of people, to be honest. More than you'd think. I can't really explain it. It's something that being gay in straight spaces is very difficult to describe to someone who hasn't felt that kind of adversity before. It's almost, I mean, we're all people of colour here, so it's almost like walking into a room full of white people and trying to own that space.
Yeah.
It's difficult. You have certain conversations that you don't even want to start. It's a tough space. So when you add the sexuality into it, think, we're actually very accepting of race nowadays. We're not accepting of sexuality. You have no idea how people are going to react. When you're entering that space and you're the only gay person within that, you do feel, or I at least, feel a certain way. And when that happens in school, when you're trying to find your identity and find your voice, it's even worse because you don't have that support. You have, well, now you have YouTube, you have like Instagram, whatever, to kind of like see there's people like you. When I was growing up, I legit thought I was the only black gay man that was out there. There was nobody.
I can imagine, man.
Literally nobody. The first black gay man I saw was Derek on Celebrity Big Brother.
Yeah.
Which was an awful example because then I immediately saw people kind of turning against him.
Yeah.
And that was my only role model that I saw that was out there doing things. So yeah, it was an awful, awful time. Yeah. But things are changing.
Yeah, man.
And how about yourself? Do you remember when you first came out?
Yeah, I was like deeply, deeply in denial for a really long time, actually. I came out when I was like 25.
Okay.
Which I'm very grateful for in a way. I feel like that denial protected me from a lot. Like, you know, because I think it would have been an absolute mess if I'd been younger. Also, I have like, I can't really talk about like queerness and race without talking about mental health because it's just kind of like where my work's at and like my own personal experiences as well. But I had so much mental health stuff going on that it kind of, I think for myself and for other people, just kind of distracted from like sexuality and like other things that might be going on because it just became like the focus of my identity for a while. So Yeah, by the time I actually did like tell my mom, I was living in New York at the time, and I just like told her over the phone. I was just like, okay, I think I'm far enough and safe here. Like, yeah.
You know? She's like,
I did tell her, and at that point, she was just like, oh yeah, I always knew you were multisexual. Is what she said.
Okay,
multisexual.
I know. She's head of the curve.
Tried. I like it. Yeah.
But it's also, I have this thing where I feel like a lot of people's coming out stories are in some way in proximity to like tragedy or death in a way. Like mm-hmm. I have a lot of like, especially like Asian, like South Asian friends mm-hmm. who like were able to come out once like an auntie had died or like some kind of tragedy had happened to kind of like put it in perspective in this. Yeah. Or to like mask it in this way. So I think for me, like, you know, they're just happy I'm alive, you know. They're just like, okay, you're good. You go do your like
that's good though,
your stuff,
man.
Yeah. So it's interesting,
especially coming from
a very lucky Asian
like family. Like,
yeah,
I know that must be very tough. Like, do you know what I mean? There's like a lot of stereotypes in like the Asian community to like get married and have a big family, all this stuff. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And some people, I mean, yeah, I have a lot of friends who have to deal with things that I really haven't, and it's like really an ongoing kind of crisis, I think, in our community of people who like Ben was saying, like, it's amazing, you know, if you can like, you can show that there's so much joy and acceptance out there, but sometimes for some people that is that's never going to come from their family, you know. It's just not. So it's also about like showing people that you can find that joy and acceptance in other places if you have to, and it can feel good.
But it must be hard knowing if you know that your family are not going to back what you believe, you know what I mean, they're not going to get behind you. I think like for me, just putting myself in someone's like shoes, for me it would be like, where would I go?
Completely.
You know what I mean? Because you're saying there's other like support systems. So where would you tell someone to go if their family wasn't accepting it?
We're building them, right? That's what we're doing. And that's kind of like the drive behind the work that like me and like a lot of people that I know who are like working in nightlife or working in community organizing or like whatever you're doing, there's a way to like gear it, you know, towards supporting those people, I think. And there is a lot out there. There's like an increasing amount as well. You know, like I'd say there's pretty much an event curated for like QTPOC people every week at this point in London, which is really different from like four or five years ago. And it's not the same, and it's never going to be, you know, like your mum accepting you for who you are and championing you. And like, that's why there are so many like queer people walking around with like a pain that's really never going to go. Yeah. But you just kind of, I think you... it's just about finding a way to live with it and finding as much love as you can in other places. And like, whether that is like the rave or like the book club or, you know, there's options. And, and I mean, queer people are like the most resourceful people that have ever lived. Like you find a way, you know.
The one thing that kind of hits me, I don't know about you, Zoo, but it feels like if you're in London, you're kind of at an advantage if you are queer. For people outside of London who don't have this access to these communities, what advice would you give?
That's really hard. And I'm like, I grew up in London, like, so I just don't have that experience at all. But I suppose it would be like, I mean, from like a mental health standpoint, it would definitely be like empathizing with yourself as much as possible around that situation and knowing that like, it's not, you know, it's not your fault. Like if you're feeling bad or shameful or alone or whatever it is, because I think we can very easily internalize and blame ourselves a lot of the time, like queer people, people of color, like any marginalized people can often, you know, easily go down that road of thinking there's something wrong with us, right? Because that's what the world tells us, right? Yeah. So I think that would be my main thing. It's just like, your situation might suck for a little while and it's not your fault. And like, the best thing you can do for yourself is to like know that and treat yourself as well as possible, nurture yourself as well as possible. So when the time comes that you can be in like, you know, a more accepting and place for yourself, then you'll be ready for that. And also create the spaces that you would like to see if you can, because there is that as well.
And that takes guts. It does, especially I guess outside of London or outside of the big city. Yeah. So that must take a lot of guts. Do you have any advice, Ben?
I mean, for me, social media is there for a reason. So yeah. you can use mm-hmm. that to kind of build a community. But I think there is also hope outside of London. I think it's, yeah, there's great stuff here, but we can't kind of see it as like this one like heavenly place where it's amazing to be LGBT. Mm-hmm. It isn't. Like it's okay. Yeah. We've got some great spaces here, but there's also some really trash spaces here. There's bad things that happen here. I think that's applicable almost sure. everywhere that you can be. Some of my closest friends grew up in villages outside of London, especially yeah. My partner, Tom. He had an incredible time being LGBT there. Okay. So he grew up in a village very close to Cambridge yeah. and he is one of the most confident gay people that I know. He, as a result of not being raised around other queer people, he just doesn't really have queer interests. So he plays football pretty much every single day. He's loves going to the gym. He loves acting and whatever else, but he's what most people would see as a very stereotypical straight man. Like he doesn't have like the gay vibe that I or many other people have from London because we did like go to those spaces when we were younger. And as a result of that, he does have some privilege because he can enter some spaces in a very different way. He can hold himself in a straight conversation with straight men. It's weird. Like it's, so I think there are some benefits if you don't grow up in London to your life and to what you can do.
Yeah.
That's mad interesting.
Yeah. I mean, again, like, he's white, so it's like, it's so hard to, like, extrapolate that experience, like, in a conversation about...
He's actually mixed race. This is... Okay. I wanted to talk about this. Yeah, I wanted to talk about this. Because I got dragged the other day around this, and it's what makes someone BAME. How BAME do you need to be BAME? Yeah. Tom is actually mixed race, so his mum is Arab. Okay. His official name is Tom Mifsud. So he's technically on paper, he is more BAME sounding than I am. Mm. I am Ben Hunt. I mean, the E kind of gives something away on the end of my second name, but I am more white sounding than him. Mm. And yet people always put him in the white bracket. I think it's so fascinating that we still haven't really had a conversation about race, about how BAME you need to be BAME. Mm. But he got a full scholarship to go to university based on him being from a lower working class, from being from a single parent family, from being an ethnic minority, et cetera, et cetera. So he's still benefiting from that system, but passing as white, even though he's not. So it is very interesting, isn't it?
That is really interesting, yeah.
Yeah. So how do your family receive, I mean, how did your family receive you coming out and then the relationship as well?
My family loved it. Okay, and this is why I'm weird, because my family were just like, you know what, cool, it is what it is. And I didn't see the negativity that I'm pretty much in constant conversation with on a daily basis now. Like, people come to me with stories of trauma and all of that. I have that from school, but I didn't have that from my family. Yeah. My godfather is gay. I was raised around him and his partner, who've been in a relationship for like 40-something years. So I saw that. I mean, until I came out, I didn't actually realise they were a gay couple. I thought they were just friends, have to say. But yeah, when I suddenly came out, they kind of like outed their lives to me. I was like, this is really good, but this would have been really useful a good few years ago. But it was, yeah, so I've always had a really supportive family, and my family's right there. And when Tom and I first got together, we met on Tinder. A few months later, we decided to make it a relationship. And when we did, I was in the process of buying a house in East London. So I said, look, why don't you just come move in with my family and I, and we can kind of like save together, because I don't want to commute to Peckham to see you all the time, because that is a journey. So he moved in with my family. So we were living there for like 6 months before I then got my flat, and then he moved straight into my flat. And then when I got my second property, he was there doing that up with me as well. A nice little cute story is when our families first met, Tom and I were actually in America, and my dad is like ex-trade, is an ex-tradesman. Tom's dad is currently a tradesman, and both our dads are like in their late 60s. And our dads both had enough ego to basically want to like do up the flat themselves. So Tom and I were in America, and both of our dads were working on our flat together, and that was the first time they actually met. Mm. So when we came back from America and kind of like walked into this incredible like fixed up apartment, our parents had been like staying in like separate rooms, like on mattresses, talking every day. So we came back and they were like best friends. It was really, really weird. So yeah, we've got a very positive experience. And to completely reflect that, I have lost several friends to suicide. Several of my friends have completed suicide who were black, who came out to their families. I've got some Asian friends as well who've done the same. In fact, literally 2 weeks ago, one of my friends, I was told after 8 months of not posting on like Facebook or anything like that, was told that they actually took their life. So
it's hard to hear that, man.
The thing is, it is what it is. And that sounds awful, but within this situation, it's like I'm so numb to it. My first friend that killed themselves was when I was like 16 or 17, and that was when I was in my first college. And then the next happened a few months after that. It was a black gay guy who came out to his family, who were a very Christian family and kind of like ran churches and stuff. The night that he came out to them and told them that he had a fiance, his family rejected him, and then he was found hung in his room. It's so common. And I think the more that you're exposed to it, the more numb you become. So literally, I can genuinely, hand on heart, say it is what it is, and it really didn't affect me because it is just so common.
That's
mad.
No, I was gonna say, I also have a friend like a few months ago who killed themselves, a queer person of color, and it is happening all around. And I think that for me, you know, I think I made a choice to like either really like feel that or like do something. And I'm not saying one is better than the other, like feeling your feelings is great, but I think for me, I wasn't in a place where I could like feel that completely. So that's kind of how Misery like really got going, the party and the, you know, the mental health hub that I'm starting. Cause I was just like, I was actually in conversation with them about trying to start something for like just people who like are a bit depressed to hang out together, you know, for queer POC who are a bit depressed to hang out together. And we were in conversation about starting something, and then they killed themselves. So I was like, all right, let's make this happen. So it's very real out here, isn't
it's
it?
So real.
It's really,
it's so real.
So yeah, for me, this is the next frontier is mental health. And like, I mean, for everyone, like for all the straight people, for everyone, like for our parents, for everyone, but like particularly like, you know, for queer POC, because you're dealing with a lot.
Yeah.
Sorry to cut you. What do you think that straight people could do to help the situation?
I feel like you've probably got some ideas, Ben.
What can straight people do? Be a friend.
Yeah.
That's the main thing. Understand your privilege and be a good friend to a queer person. There's... I'm not even going to unpack it, because this is the problem is like there's so much to talk about.
Yeah, of course. Get it's into like, it though, man. Get into
like,
it.
I think approaching without judgment, it seems like quite a basic thing, but it's actually.
I think it's so hard for people.
It is really hard for people, and it's like it's a practice. It's like a muscle you have to, like, I have to as well. Like, and as a counselor, like in my work there, it's every day you step into a space and you're like, you know, I come open, I come without judgment, I come wanting to center that person and their needs rather than like what I think about who they are or what they could be doing, or you know, it's like it's really just listening, like you said, being a friend, like being a non-judgmental friend, and then also educating yourself, whatever that means for you and whatever is like possible for you with the resources that you have or whatever, but just like being curious enough about someone else's experience to like do some research, you know.
It's interesting, actually. I had this conversation with my brother recently. It's about having doubt, and you can eliminate doubt or at least lessen doubt by educating yourself. Because once you educate yourself, then,
what you're scared of.
Yeah, exactly. Do you think it is really about normalizing, normalizing LGBT?
I hate that word. Usualizing. I think usualizing is more important, because none of us are normal. What is normal?
Literally,
what is normal? That's what is true. Usual is what we see very often. And I think we usually see straight couples in advertising. We usually see straight couples in the street kissing. Yeah. We see usual things. I think what hurt me when I was younger was the fact that I didn't feel normal. It was, I thought that was normal, and I thought I was the other thing. I thought like I was an alien. So yeah, I think the more that we can usualize things, we are seeing it a lot. I mean, the very fact that we're here, I mean, I'm guessing that your podcast is very straight-facing. So the very fact that we're even talking about these issues and bringing it to a new audience is, that is usualizing the queer experience.
Yeah.
I think a big problem from my view is the way that people sexualize like people in the LGBT community. I think like, especially like when I was growing up, young males around me, like if we talk about like people that are gay or lesbian, they're instantly just thinking about what's going on in their sexual life. And I don't know what that is. Do you know what I mean? Because when you think of a straight person, I don't think about what's going on with...
I think it's jealousy.
You think it's jealousy?
On some level. But, like, or like jealousy and curiosity, do you know what I mean?
Subconscious because jealousy, curiosity thing, like...
Partly. I think so, yeah.
I'd agree with that, actually. I think it's the idea of being different. I mean, in this world, we are all fighting to be different. We are all fighting to be unique in some way. We are all, like, creating our own journeys on a daily basis, uploading it to the internet and hoping that we're all more interesting than the next person. And genuinely, growing up, my life was so interesting. I was just like, I can't... It was so different and so unique. But in some ways, yeah, I do think people were quite jealous of, like, the... Just being different is just so powerful. So yeah, I think there is an aspect of like jealousy in there. But then I think there's just a lot of fear as well. For me, it was the fact that I was playing a lot of sport when I was growing up, and for when people didn't realize that I was gay, they were telling me about, oh my God, like I'm so scared about guys being in the changing room who might be gay and blah, 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 what they're gonna do to me. All of that. Or when you're at parties and people are just like, oh, God, I'm going to get drunk or I'm going to take this or whatever and I don't want gay guys coming on to me. It's just like, well, one, you're not even that good looking. No one's going to come on to you for stuff. It's just like, it's that element of fear in someone's minds about what is going to happen. But
when literally nothing's going to happen.
Also
fear of their own desires at the same time.
Oh, I'm glad you went
there.
I was going to go there.
It's like all of that. It's all of that mixed into one, which is,
I think it's hard to accept, though. I think... Like, especially me growing up when I was young, I used to be a little idiot. I used to think, like, I used to judge the whole world. Like, I used to be scared of trans people, bruv. I don't know why. I was scared of people that had plastic surgery when I was a little kid. So when I first saw a trans person, I was like, yo, this is bare weird. But then, obviously getting older, the more I've worked with people, the more I've gone into life. When I started doing, like, youth work and stuff when I was, like 18. So I had to start working with different types of people, different types of ideologies. And made me. That's when I broke myself down. I looked at myself and said, how can I judge anyone for any decision that they make? You know what I mean? But I feel like growing up, it was hard because if you felt differently, I felt like all the people around me think, yo, why do you rate that? Like, why are you going along with that? Like, that's not normal. Do you know what I mean? Like, if there was like, we had someone in my school that was gay, and I was really good friends with him. Like, I sleep at his house and that. Yeah? And I used to get this, like, oh, what was you lot doing yesterday?
Yes.
I'd be like, bro, who's watching music videos?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, he was my good friend, and I see him to this day. Like, I see his mom, and it's like we got a lot of love. Do you know what I mean? But when I was growing up, I used to go to this guy's house, chill at his house, chill with his family, go to him with school. He was just my brethren. But people used to always get onto me, like, what are you lot doing? And it's just that pressure, like on him at such a young age as well. We was like, we was 13. Do you know what I mean? What were we doing at 13?
And he'd come out that.
No, he didn't come out. He came out when he was a bit older. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, like, it was one of them where just the way that he was, his mannerisms, the kind of person he was, people just used to love to put him in a box. But I used to always have to tell people, you know what? He's just like us, you know? Like, me and him should sit down and just watch, like, Nicki Minaj music videos and that and just talk about the chicks and that. You know what I mean? Like, he may not be talking about it like me, but you know what I mean? We're both connecting. Do you know what I mean? And I think it's hard, especially, like, where I'm from, like, coming from the ends and that, like, man are just stuck in their ways purely because they don't want to look different to someone else. They don't want to be like, right, I got a different way of thinking to you, you know? Just because people don't want to pull up their friend. I've had to pull up my friend sometimes and they're looking at me like, who do you think you are? Like, you think you're like a savior or something like that? Do you know what I mean?
There is definitely stigma around it. And I think like that is something that is very hard to deal with as a kid. And even, and I guess it shapes the way you think or feel for a long time until you are corrected.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think obviously kids are immature, isn't it? Kids are immature. And I feel like nowadays, obviously, we're becoming more... exposed to things, you know what I mean? Like when I like, especially in like movie roles, I feel like movies are sick because they're so like inclusive now. Not all movies, you know what I mean? But there's certain roles in movies that you would have never seen before. Do you know what I mean? Like just that include all types of people. So I think it's sick because what's that doing is it's making you more open to this stuff. Like you were saying, when you was growing up, your only representation was from Big Brother. Do you know what I mean? Which is crazy. But now you look at things are different. Like there's adverts that include all types of people. Do you know what I mean? And I think it's what is sick is that it's about that representation. I think representation is very important. I think it's some people, like, they've gone through their whole life, no one in their family is gay or lesbian. No one. They have never met no one. So for them it's like, how am I supposed to become accustomed to this? But you shouldn't have to. Do you know what I mean? That shouldn't be a barrier. But it's a barrier that's put up. I think it's by society. Like, I think it's a divide and conquer thing. Like, the more that we're not together, the easier it is to control. Obviously, that's like a little super emotional society thing. But I just think that there's barriers that they put in place to break us down. Like, do you know what I mean? And I think sexuality is one that they're using very well. But I think things are changing, though. I don't know. That's from my standpoint.
Things are definitely changing within sexuality perspective. But I think in gender, things are getting worse. I think that things are really bad at the moment for transgender people and individuals.
I felt like the next step now. I feel like that's the next step that people are trying to make people become more used to and less like. I remember when Caitlyn Jenner came out and was like, everyone was like, wow, this is so mad. But if you actually watch Keep Up with Kardashians, it wasn't like a super mad thing. Like, you knew that this is what he wanted. Do you know what I mean? Especially the kind of person that he was. But like, when it happened, I remember just seeing all the jokes online, all the things online. Like, you could really see what he was like a standpoint for a lot of trans people, I think, for coming out, because he took such a backlash. Mm-hmm. But then the exception that he got from all the celebrities, all the people around, I think it made people realise, rah, like, we need to start looking at the way we start dealing with people, because like, that hate that he was getting online was crazy. But then the love that he got from the celebrities, I think it kind of like reinstalled to people, like, you know what, this guy's my guy. Like, do you know what I mean?
I think she would use she pronouns now as well.
Ah, sorry, sorry.
Yeah, no, it's okay. It's just like, it's all of that, isn't it? Right?
I get you.
And then
I get you.
And it's interesting, in the topic of gender, do you think that it is a privilege to be a woman more so than to be a man and being gay?
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Like, is it easier to be like a gay woman than a gay man?
Right, exactly.
No.
You don't.
I mean, I've never really done the like mental gymnast, like I've never tried to like really pit them against each other. I think there's different experiences and like, and I'll be talking about cis women or like trans women as well. You know, like there's like, there's so much there. I think, it's a really interesting question. I think historically, like women, because they are expected in so many societies in so many ways to be like domestic, whatever, and do things within the home and like do it together and raise children together and stuff, that there's been obviously like legacies and histories of like, women being really gay together and raising families and kind of getting away with that in a way that's not, you know, it's not as obvious as if like two men were going to do it, whatever. But then being a woman is really hard, you know, and like has its own violence. And also there's like an invisibility to like lesbianism that can feel really difficult because it's just kind of like not taken very seriously in a way, you know, it's just kind of like, maybe because there's no like dick involved or something. It's just like, I think honestly, like part of it is, you know, it's around that or like not like a certain kind of dick anyway. So, there's, I don't know, there's pros and cons, I suppose, all around.
What do you think, Ben?
From the conversations I have on a daily basis, I'd say it's pretty equal, to be honest. Okay. It's depending on where you live. It can either be a great experience to be LGBT or it can be absolute trash. And I don't think that it discriminates based on gender or how you look or what you feel like or anything like that. It literally is. It's an individual experience. It's it's what you make of it as well. It's whether or not you put up the fight. I know several people who are still in the closet, who are still in supposedly straight relationships, living their best lives. I've had people within the grime scene who have reached out asking me how I do what I do, saying that they've been a certain way back in the day and they're kind of like covering it up and whatever. And it's you... these people are struggling and they're seeing the lack of visual representation, kind of taking it personally, yeah. that if they were to come out, then this would happen and that would happen. So I think it really is an individual experience. It's down to what you make of it, and hopefully it's as good for you as possible.
And how do you think, you mentioned people in the grime scene, how do you think media, music, how do you think we can change things to...
Gosh, I don't know. Mm. I just don't know. I would never put activist above my name or next to my name because I'm not. I report on stories and basically say what's out there. I've only been in this role for like 3 months. So for me, it's I see what's out there and just tell the people it. But my Instagram DMs are an absolute mess of people basically coming out and outing themselves and talking about gay experiences. How do I feel like this? What am I going to do? Like, you can be out there and be so proud of being LGBT. Why can't I? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, from people with many blue ticks next to their name and whatever yeah. else. So yeah, it's, yeah. I don't 100%. Know. We're not in a good place for people to come out with a platform as yet. We're just not. Yeah. You can see some shining examples over the past few weeks and months.
Yeah.
But I think that some people have still had a huge, like, whether it's a music label behind them or whether it's great PR behind them or young fans who really support them. Yeah. But for several people, they'll just never get the opportunity.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's like Lil Nas exactly. came out and, you know, people supported him, you know yeah. what I mean? He was making jokes out of it. And I remember, like, my man then were, like, sending it in a group, retweeting it, like, oh, this guy's a joker. Do you know what I mean? But definitely, I know what you mean, like, in terms of, like, people that in like, a music genre, like, grime, that's just, mm-hmm. like, considered yeah. to be so greasy and so gritty. Yeah. Like, I know that it's hard because I got friends in grime that are part of the LGBT community. And it's like, you know, there's one girl called... FFS and Wido, yeah, she's crazy. Like, you need to check her out, yeah. So her at is FFS Wido, yeah, and she's lesbian. And the things that she talks, it's just so sick. Like, she'll do freestyles like about like her girl and that, and it's just like, this is lit. But it's that representation. I think that it needs to get pushed a bit more, like, rather than like push it aside. Do you know what I mean? Like, so people like her, there's other MCs as well that have come out, and I think like what you're saying, like people coming to your DM saying that. Like, it's hard for them. Do you know what I mean? Like, having that, I think that's part of the process. Like, having someone like you, who someone, obviously you're not saying you're an activist, mm-hmm. but it's that representation, isn't it? So they can see that, they know that you're doing well in what you're doing. Mm-hmm. So, because I feel like people feel like it might be a hindrance to, like, especially like a grime MC, they might think, Rob, mm-hmm. like, I'm like, is this going to affect my music career? Do you know what I mean?
What's that whole stigma
yeah.
idea, is that, isn't it?
Yeah. Obviously, it's down to people's understanding. I think it's down to the way that we understand things and the way that we take in things as well.
Yeah. Well, I think, yeah, like, representation is really important. I think it has to be met with, like, more than that as well, though, yeah. you know? Because, like, we're in this interesting spot now where, like, pretty much all of my friends, like, were cast for, like, adverts or, like, something, like, yeah. over Pride season, da da da. Like,
yeah.
I got all these free clothes from Levi's, right, for doing this documentary,
yeah.
which they, like, sponsored or whatever, and it was all about queer history, and that's cool and that's fine, and I got, like, have enough denim, like, to last me until I'm like 105, and that's cool. And then, like, I remember I came out with, like, these bags, and then saw two of my friends from New York who are, like, in this, you know, beautiful queer POC relationship, like, on the massive, like, TV advert yeah. thing outside H&M on Oxford Street. And it actually just made me cry, like, not in a good way.
Yeah. Not in a good way.
It's, I don't know. It was like, I mean, I don't know, man. I was physically tired from carrying all of this, yeah, like, all of these clothes. And, like, I saw it and I just kind of felt like this isn't the liberation we've been waiting for. I'm like, I turned 30 this year. So I'm old now, right?
You do not look
no, black no. crack.
But there's something in that too, because I think I grew up a lot on the principles of, like, anti-capitalism and, like, just, like, you know, wider structural issues mm-hmm. that, like, pervade our lives and, like, everything. And I've done a lot of, like, casework jobs and really intense mental health jobs and stuff like that. And so it upset me seeing that, because I just felt, I actually texted, like, this person I'm seeing, and I was like, you know, I'm crying outside H&M because this isn't like the liberation. And they were like, well, you know, your bank account's liberated for now, so just get in a car and come home, you know, like, you're good. But it's, we need so much more than that. Like, yeah. representation is good, but it feels very, like, unsustainable to me, you know. I'm like, what, where is this going, you know, like these select, and still these people who are being selected as representatives, they look a certain way, you know, they still light like skin. They're still ticking like a lot of like very specific, like light skin, thin, you know, able-bodied model-esque. Boxes, model-esque, really. Like, so we're being like curated by brands, you know, for money. And like, we can't say no. Like, I have a lot of, I have friends too, who are like doing amazing work, doing amazing stuff in nightlife, like really like completely revolutionizing that scene, creating spaces. And then, you know, alcohol brands, you know, are coming with money that you can't say no to. And so then we're also, you know, like they're the faces of different, while at the same time trying to sustain spaces outside of alcohol dependent. You know, there's just a lot going on, and it's actually, it's a really tricky situation. And I do fear, I fear a little bit for the youngers, you know, because they're seeing, I think they're seeing that as the goal now. Some of them, I mean, I don't know, they're like way smarter than like I could imagine probably, and like than I was when I was that age. But also I think there's, we're kind of trapped in a really intense like cycle of like branding ourselves and using our identities to make money. I mean, that's what I'm doing. I mean, that's what we're doing. We're also here, we're talking on an LGBTQ podcast, you know what I mean? Like, because that's part of our identity, and like, it's profitable right now. And that really scares me. And I think that's why for me, like, as much as we want to do those things and get that money because we have to and we deserve it, it's also like, I'm like, what's happening on the ground, right? Like, what is there for those people who like might not look that way or might never have that platform or like just want to come out and like live their lives and like don't want to be like a torch holder for like gayness, do you know what I mean? Because like, you shouldn't have to. You shouldn't have to. What's there for them to help them process their emotions and to feel safe and like, you know, feel okay.
You spoke a little bit about Pride before that and that this year you went with Levi.
So there's a new museum opening called Queer Britain, and they commissioned with Levi's and Galdem, who I write for as well. They commissioned a documentary series, so they chose like four young queer people to go and speak to a queer elder in community, which was really cute, actually. So I ended up speaking to... Oh, sorry, that's my... don't know why it does that. I ended up speaking to DJ Ritu, who's like... started basically in the late 80s, like a cutie pop club night, but I think specifically geared towards queer South Asians. But it's called Club Carly. It still goes on now. It's amazing. So we talked about that.
And did you celebrate Pride?
I went to Black Pride.
Did you? Yeah.
Yeah. I also DJed the Black Pride after party, which is really cute.
Amazing.
yes, I saved all my Pride energy. I've actually never been to Pride, like the kind of commercial Pride. It's also my birthday that weekend, so like
commercial Pride. I'm dead. That's
how do you feel about commercial Pride?
I think this is why it's so fascinating when people group the LGBT community in one bubble, because they neglect the fact that within that community or supposed community, you have so many views and opinions. Mm-hmm. We're not one being that thinks and acts the same way.
Exactly the same.
Exactly. People
that's what people think.
People always think
that. It's the same with BAME,
it's exactly the same with BAME. Mm-hmm. I don't know who told anyone I have the same experience as a Chinese man living in I don't know, wherever, Buckinghamshire, but apparently, according to many different boards, we do, and we're just a BAME person, and that's us.
Put people in a box, man.
Exactly. And I think it's easy to do that and kind of neglect the fact that we do think and act differently. And on that point, I think the commercialization of Pride, for me, is something that it doesn't really affect me too much, because... say for this weekend, this Prague Pride, when I had my LGBT YouTube channel, which is still up, that I can't post on because of now BBC rules. When I had that, it was fascinating because I was getting all of these different offers to promote various things. And now that I've kind of got LGBT platforms back and I'm kind of building those platforms now, even this weekend for Prague Pride, I was offered a few £1,000 to go to this Pride. They'll pay for everything. They just want me to walk and kind of like wave a flag or whatever. It is fascinating how activism is now being branded. Mm. But, and this is a big but, I don't really see it as a negative thing at all. I studied medicine in Malaysia. I went there, that was my university experience. After that, working for BBC Africa as a presenter for them, I was on the continent every other week and I was speaking to people within various different countries where they cannot celebrate Pride, where they cannot walk out their houses proud of who they are. They can't post on social media about Pride. How blessed we are to be in a position that we can walk down Oxford Street, one of the biggest, most commercial streets in the world, look up and see rainbows and someone holding hands with another same-sex person. I can see both sides, obviously, and for BBC impartiality, I have to see both sides. But I think from my perspective, we are in such a blessed opportunity to kind of just see ourselves reflected, that to almost dig deep and blame brands for wanting to promote us is scary. Because this is what we've been fighting for so long. Yes, it may have gone too far in one way, but we are so lucky to have the opportunity to see that visual representation. When there was all of the arguments about the LGBT sandwich that M&S were making, which was supporting Albert Kennedy Trust. And I just had to take a step back from it. And people were asking, like, why are you not reporting on it? Why are you not reporting on it? I was like, because, in all honesty, I really have nothing to say. Because for me, it's a brand that wanted to do something to show that they were supporting LGBT people. And they are a commercial entity. They sell things. What else were they going to do? They're going to sell something with a flag on it. They're going to sell something that has LGBT on. Yes, it can generate money. They tried to route some of it towards a charity. But I think to kind of distance ourselves from these brands who are ultimately using identity, yes, to promote themselves. At the same time, they're promoting LGBT equality. They're promoting acceptance. They're promoting love. Where's the problem with that?
Damn.
Mm-hmm.
Should I respond to that?
Respond. Yeah, this is why it's a conversation.
I mean, yeah, I think it's a bit of both as well. I think we can easily feel quite challenged to, like, take a strong position on, like, either side of these things. And I think it's actually okay to also be like, yeah, both of those things, right? Yeah. Like, both of those things are true. Like, I totally agree with you. Like, we're blessed, you know? And if I had to, like, write a list of all the problems in the world, you know, the fact that I got paid, you know, by a brand to fucking talk about, to talk about being gay is not going to be like high on that list. But then I think at the same time, we also get to like have a slightly like icky feeling about it if we want to, like, because like nothing's simple, you know? So it's like within our community, there's loads of people, there's people that have different ideas about things. And then there's even as an individual person, you can hold multiple ideas about something as well, right? So I think it is like, it's all of that. But there's a larger sustainability question for me around that, because I'm like, we are so lucky and this is great, but I also think it's a trick of capitalism for us to be made to feel like we're so lucky. You know, it's like, you're so lucky that these brands who essentially like run the world and have so much power are okay with you being gay, and we're actually going to use your bodies to help, you know, promote us and our image. And that is, it could be much worse than that. But I'm also like, and what? Where do we go from there? Like, is that going to be forever? Are they going to move on to something else? Like, which bodies are they using? What are the stipulations around that money? Like, and I honestly do think it's scary the way that like queerness is becoming complicit with advertising in general, you know, because like, you know, you're scrolling Instagram and I'm like, I don't know if my friends are talking to me or if they're advertising to me at this point, you know?
That's so interesting.
I think that's scary.
I think for this, we've become so mainstream and I don't see the fear of it. I think we've for a long time, we've fed into a capitalist society. For a long time, we've been scrolling through Instagram and been sold things to the point that it's less social media and it's now a marketing platform. I think for queer bodies and queer people to now encounter those same opportunities, well, it's been a long time coming. It should have been that way from the beginning. So I think I would genuinely love to be educated on this about why it's such an issue, because I can obviously see why it's bad for organizations to be making money from LGBT people. I get it in some way, but what is the negative? Like, what is the bad thing about it? Or is it just like an ongoing fear that it's almost a worry that they're using us now? But then they've used people for ages. They've used beautiful people, they've used mixed race people, they've used skinny people. Why now is it a worry for queer people to become mainstream and to be used in that same way?
Yeah, I think it's not like suddenly become a worry. I think maybe people who are concerned with it are people who've been like worried about capitalism for a long time, you know? So capitalism didn't just become an issue because queer people are now taking part in it or whatever, you know, or like are now like the face of it. Like capitalism's been an issue. And like if we're looking in a, you know, a big, if we're looking at the big picture here, like those same like images that you were describing to us of like being in places and countries and towns where you can't celebrate pride, where you can't be who, all of that is linked to capitalism, you know, like all of that is linked to like global superpowers and like the structures of the, you know, like all of that stuff, colonialism, all of that. So it's a larger question, I think, of, about power. So it's like on the zoom in, the fact that like many of my good friends are like getting paid money by brands to say stuff, whatever, do stuff. I'm like, live your best life, sweetie. Mm-hmm. Like, absolutely. Like, it's actually like, you know, it's my duty as their friend to like support them in that and not make them feel shameful or anything like that. And then also at the same time, you can have a critical eye. And I think a lot of my friends who are engaging in it do have that critical eye at the same time. You know, I think you have to be a little bit critical because we are talking about the same thing ultimately, which is about like the structures of the world and the way that they oppress certain people. And like advertising agencies are not going to fight for us if it, you know, when it really comes down to it, they're not.
I get you. It's hard. Yeah. It's a fine line. Because I get what you're both saying.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? I know there's an agenda behind things, but you also have to be like, at least we're here, innit? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. But like, at least we're here and we'll be smart about it and we'll be critical about it and we'll keep up, you know?
It's like, hard, like, because what you're mentioning, sort of game, the higher powers, is mad, isn't it? I feel like these brands know exactly what they're doing when they're doing something. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Mm. And they think it is the case for many different communities as well.
Yeah.
I completely get where you're coming from.
Yeah. And I guess as someone who's working with the like day-to-day mental health effects, you know, of all of this stuff, I'm just like, you know, I want to see like some Levi's or something just like build a mental Cutie Park mental health center. Do you know what I mean? That would there'd be nothing to them. Like that's the kind of stuff. That's the next. When we start seeing that, I'm like, all right, I'm in.
Take me.
I completely agree.
You know, and maybe we are going. Maybe we are going. I don't know. So like, I'm open to it. I'm keeping all the doors open. But I'm watching. I'm watching.
All right, boom.
Yeah.
So what we like to do on this podcast
every week
is ask our wonderful guests to bring an item. Yeah. That represents the topic.
Maybe it's a poem.
Oh yeah.
Piece of literature.
You know what? I tried with the poem. I read like, I'm not really a big poetry guy. Like I tried. I read like 12 poems last night. I was like, bring a poem. And I was just like, I'm not bringing a poem.
Have you bought anything?
Yeah, I did.
You did? Okay. I was going to say that like, your tattoo, God Adores You, is a great piece of literature.
Oh my God.
I saw it.
Thank you.
I know.
Jeez.
I do. I have a tattoo that says God Adore You over here.
Wow.
Because I watched this little film, a really cute film about like faith and gay and queerness and blah, blah, blah. And there was like this like Nigerian priest on it. I can't remember his name. Probably.
Is he in the UK at the moment?
Yeah.
It's Jide.
Yeah. He's just amazing. He's just amazing. And he was on there and he was like, the person was like, what do you say to people who are like, you can't be gay and be a priest? And he's like, I say, God adores you, gay. Like,
yeah.
God adores you.
Yeah.
So anyway, I got God.
If anybody ever says anything to you on the tube or if they're like angry, you're just like, God adores you.
Yeah, I know,
you.
I love it.
They're just like, what?
So gay. So yeah, there is that. Thank you. But no, I also brought.
So there is that item.
And then I brought my medication in my cute little pill box.
Pill box.
Because I think for me, this just like signifies shame a little bit. And I think, you know, we all have a lot of shame around different things. And like, if you're queer, if you're like, I don't know, have disability or like deal with mental health stuff actively, there's just a lot that you can feel shame around. So a lot of my work is just about trying to like release the shame and just like be who you are. And I think specifically there's a lot of shame around taking medication as well, or like indicating to anyone that like you are in some way like need extra help mentally
100%.
Or in any way. Yeah. So yeah, I just kind of grabbed this on my way out and it's something I've been thinking about a lot recently. And I started a medication a year ago that's like completely changed my life and my like experience of like day-to-day living. It's just kind of mad. But that's a different podcast. But yeah.
Smiley faces on every single day.
Yes.
And they're glittery. They shimmer.
Glittery
so
smile.
I just smile looking at that
podcast. That's what I bought.
Ben, did you bring anything?
Yes, I did. So mine is actually on Spotify, and it is this. It is the complete Cass Elliot solo collection. So this is a lady called Mama Cass. A lot of people don't know Mama Cass, but Mama Cass was everything. And for me, she signifies acceptance and love and finding yourself and kind of just going with it. So Mama Cass was part of Mamas and Papas. So she did like California Dreaming. And also, if you know, Dream a Little Dream of Me, Stars Shining Bright.
Yeah, that's a banger.
So she was part of this group, and she was a very big, hefty, fat, white woman who lived her best life with an incredibly soulful voice. She would always give two middle fingers up to people who didn't want her to interact with like black people and black artists. She would appear alongside like Sammy Davis Jr. and sing with him, be in bed with him on TV, singing a song, and literally just saying like, absolutely F you to anyone that's going to like stop me being a big fat white woman and living my best life. And for me, she just, she really helped me to understand myself. She very unfortunately died very young, but she didn't kind of like get to really fulfill her potential. But when I was first coming to terms with my sexuality, and when I did get like pushed out of my school, my mum put a Mama Cass vinyl on my bed and kind of like left it for me. And I'd never even heard of this woman before this moment. You have to understand this. So when I put this vinyl on, the first song was called Make Your Own Kind of Music. And it kind of talks about like, yeah, just make your own kind of music, sing your own special song, blah, 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 blah. Make your own kind of music, even if nobody else sings along. It's like just living your best life. Then she's got so many other songs about kind of like leaving places if they're bad for you and kind of just going off and just doing your own thing. And that's, it spurred me to go and just be me. So the reason I went to university in Malaysia and kind of like got that full scholarship to go abroad was because I was like, you know what, London, I'm done with you. I don't need to be here anymore. I'm kind of like leaving all of this bad behind and going elsewhere. And there's so many moments in my life that can kind of like be linked to Mama Cass songs. And it's weird. Like, hopefully I'm not heading for an early death, but she, her songs have just been kind of underlining specific key moments in my life. So yeah. All out to Mama Cass.
I want to listen now. I know some of the songs that you're talking about.
She's everything, like literally everything. I'm surprised that, in fact, no, someone did rip off her song the other day. What is her name? Is it Paloma Faith? She did you know what it is? It's like, it's that moment of like gentrification where something that you has held like so much meaning to you. And Tom and I were driving to his parents in Cambridge, and then this person like introduced a song, and she's like, okay, so this is Make Your Own Kind of Music by Paloma Faith. And I turned to Tom, I was like, excuse me? And then the song played, and just hearing her version of it, which had no soul, which was so auto. You need to just listen to both of them and just compare them. And just imagine my face, because it's something that no one knew. And then suddenly this song was everywhere, getting like BBC plays and everything, without actually crediting the original artist who like meant so much to me. So it was one of the first moments I actually fully felt what some people feel like when their favorite things are kind of like turned out to be mainstream. But it was a horrific moment. I was so upset by it. But again, it's good. Representation is good. So I'm sure some people went online and kind of like Googled it and got like, did like the back history and stuff. But yeah, she's an incredible artist, and she has really, really helped me. And her album, weirdly, this is very odd, later in life, I found out that her album was used as a soundtrack for a gay film called Beautiful Thing, which is all about two gay guys who live on a council estate who are very straight acting, kind of like both in like football teams and stuff, and they fall in love. And it's a film from like the 90s, and it's an incredible film. It's been made into like plays and whatever else after, and like books. But Mama Cass music is used within that film. And I only found that out later. So actually, I don't know whether it's like a thing for Mama Cass. I don't know whether my mum had come across the film. I have no idea. But whatever it is, Mama Cass's music really, really has helped the community in a weird way.
On the topic of films, do you think that there are any good films out there to watch if you are struggling with coming out, or even just if you are?
Hell yeah.
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 Beautiful Thing.
Yeah.
Beautiful Thing is a very good one to start with.
Is that UK? Is that UK?
It's UK.
Okay.
It's from back in the day. And there's no unnecessary sex scenes or anything like that, just so you know. It is
just necessary ones. Good.
No, because I find that a lot of like LGBT films, and this is weird, like growing up, when I was trying to find like positive representation and I was watching some films that were like said to be like gay things that were gonna like help you come to terms with it. It was just sex. It was just glorified porn. There's so much porn out there already. We don't need it in like Hollywood cinemas. But within Beautiful Thing, there's none of that. It kind of just, it really like strips it back to just being about love and finding love and acceptance. And the guys like kind of run off to a queer pub and experience their first like drag queen night. Aww. And it's all of that. It's just like, it's things that I went through. I can kind of watch and just be like, oh my gosh. And even we were talking earlier about like sleepovers and stuff. And in this, one of the guys like really wants to do something, but it's just like, no, I need to hold myself back because I don't know if the person's gay or not. And it's all the things that I would have gone through and many other people go through when they're growing up gay or queer. So that's great. What else? Wait, while I think of the next one, go
ahead,
jump on.
Yeah, right, okay. There's Moonlight, of course.
Yeah. Oh, that's a banging film.
Beautiful.
What a film.
Just beautiful. And also there's a film called Pariah. Which is about like a young black girl. I think it's US based. Yeah. Coming out to her mom, and it's just like, it's my favorite. It's like my favorite film. Mm. It's a little heavy, so it's like
Pariah.
I think that's okay. I think it's like, it could be a really cathartic watch for some people. It's just like beautifully written. It was actually made as a student film by someone who was doing like an MA in film or something. Mm. It's short. It's like maybe like an hour. Yeah, it's really short, but it's just beautiful. Mm-hmm.
Any other?
There's a lot. You know what? It's Google it.
Pop a list.
Hit those lists because there's so much.
Yeah.
And
just be wary of the Netflix LGBTQ section because that's
really.
Well,
yeah. I can't even go in, so I'm going to allow you to go in. Yeah.
What are you saying? It's not levels.
It's what you were saying before. It's like kind of like just soft porn. Really, really poor like writing. Yeah, like we don't deserve good art or something. I don't know. It's sad.
You deserve it.
Also, shout out Brown Mums for like leaving music on beds. My mum also did that with me, but left Kate Bush, like leaving these like queer icons for us, like which was about 10 years before I came out. So I don't know what's like.
That's so juicy. I love it.
Oh my god, no, Kate Bush is a bit. I mean,
it's a vibe. It's actually a vibe.
Yeah, how I just weird. Love that. Yeah. I love how they just have to leave it there as well. Like, no eye contact.
No,
do you know what I mean?
Contact,
no eye contact. It's just, that's really
take
cute.
This.
We
it's
need
for
this.
You.
This yeah. is my life. It's like,
it's really cute.
Boom.
So that was Ben Hunt.
And that was Aisha Mirza.
Woo! Hey guys, if you're loving the podcast and want to support the cause, make sure to rate and review us.
Make sure you tell your friends and follow us on Insta and Twitter
at
This Is Spoke Pod.
Pod.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.